Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Live from Training Camp 2018, inside the walls of UC Health Training Center, presented by Epic Mountain Gear. Here's Schlereth than Evans.
Hey, good Tuesday morning to you, Mark Schlereth, alongside Troy Rank here on Schlereth than Evans from the UC Health Training Center. We're getting a little bit of sprinkle, Troy, a little sprinkle, kind of a chilly morning, but the Broncos are going to practice this morning at about 9:30. This is open to the public, right, Scott DeHuff?
Yeah,
this is one of those practices open to the public as they prepare for the Minnesota Vikings, who roll into town on Saturday for preseason game number one. Really exciting, a lot of stuff going on, but I got to go back to last night. Rain delay, the Rockies. Kyle Freeland comes out and pitches a gem. I think a two-hitter last night for Kyle Freeland. He was absolutely sensational, even coming out after about an hour, because it was about a half-hour delay, but he was the bottom half of the inning went on for a while before they delayed the game. Then you're in for a half an hour. Then the bottom half of the inning, they come back out, and they have to finish that bottom half of the inning, and then he comes out to pitch. I mean, it was probably, he was probably without pitching about 50, 55 minutes before he went back on the mound. I just thought he was phenomenal last night. And guess what? Wade Davis, 1-2-3. Thank you very much. Although I have to admit, Troy, when he starts the first hitter 3-1, I was like, dude, if you walk this first hitter, this has been the problem, right? This has been the issue that you've had. But he looked phenomenal and a great victory over a really good team to come out of that thing with a 2-0 victory. Pittsburgh has been hot here the last month or so. So great victory, a really, really fun game to watch.
Well, the reality is this. Kyle Freeland's been their best pitcher all season.
Right.
He's a 2.18 ERA at home for the season? I mean, are you kidding me? He's given up the same amount of runs as, like, Mike Hampton and Nagel gave up in a start. You know, I mean, it's just the idea you could throw a two out for a full season at Coors. I know it's the humidor. I get it. It's still a difficult place to pitch. A lot of hits, big field. And all he does is put his foot down. And like you said, the circumstances weren't great. The good team he's pitching against, they're having a bad, week. It's 2-5 and a long delay. It's right on the number, probably, whether he can come back. I mean,
right.
You're starting to see, like, can he come back? I'm sure he's getting loose in the cage down there. But regardless, it's not ideal for a big league pitcher to wait that long. And all he does is go out and just throw strikes, pound the strike zone, 103 pitches in 7 innings. Does his job again in the 8th. Davis, again, that first hitter, a little squirrely, but after that, it looked kind of, I'm going to say the old way Davis, but he was pounding the strike zone.
Right.
Pounding the strike zone, and that's the guy he should be.
He wasn't missing up and in with his fastball, which is really, right. Really hurt him. He kept it on the outside edge. He was painting the black on the outside edge. He threw a couple of off-speed pitches. It was good, 90-mile-an-hour slider. He threw that hammer once. I think he got the strikeout on the hammer at the very end of the game. But that was a great thing. I tell you the other thing about Freeland, mixes up a bunch of pitches, but his fastball cuts in so hard to righties. And it's amazing because guys start to swing at that damn thing thinking that's center cut. That's center cut 92, and then it's down underneath the label by the time they get the bat on it. And he is really fun to watch. And the variance of speed that he mixes up with, because his fastball will be anywhere from, I know he throws like a cut fastball at about 88, 89, but he'll run it up to 94, but he'll sit 91, 94, and cut it into right-handers. I just think it's been a lot of fun to watch him. And the Rockies, you know what? They just, every time you want to bury them, every time you want to kind of say, it's too much to overcome. They had this bad road trip, 2-5. Milwaukee Brewers exposed them a little bit. Every time you want to bury them, they just come out and perform. And tonight, they get Chad Bettis back on the bump. So what's your assessment of Chad Bettis? A couple of minor league rehab starts. What do you think about him and his chances of going out there and performing like the rest of these Rocky starters going deep into the baseball games?
Well, I know the players will have confidence in Chad. He competes. I mean, he's a bulldog in his mentality. So guys will feel comfortable even though he's coming off a rehab. They're not going to feel like he's, feeling his way through it. The issue with Chad, he's dealt with this blister. He said he's changed the grip on the baseball. The new baseball, something's going on with the seams this year where you've got multiple guys deal with the blister issue, not just on the Rockies team. But Bettis will compete. I would think realistically, Mark, a good start for him might be 5 1/3 and 2 runs, 6 innings, 3 runs. You know, he's been off for a bit.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're not going to – you know, you can't think shutout like Kyle threw out there last night, 7 and scoreless. But keep him in the game. I think he's going against Jameson Taillon, right, who also battled testicular cancer. So they're friends. They became friends through their
right.
cancer battle. So that'll be probably a little emotional for him, given everything Chad's gone through. But Chad, after all that, you know, and being a patient and being a survivor, he wants to be a competitor and win. Like, he is really, really competitive from my time knowing Chad. So to be in a pennant race right now, to be in a playoff race, this is what you live for as a player. So I would be surprised if Chad doesn't pitch well, but I would say temper the expectations in terms of the number of innings pitched. Again, if it's 5 1/3 or 5 2/3 and two, then this is the night the bullpen has to bow its back and maybe get you some extra outs.
What's it like for this team to face their former manager in Clint Hurdle? He seems to be a beloved character here. The crowd is always so gracious to Clint. Clint has been, you know, Clint is, I don't know how many people know Clint or know him well. I do. He's a gracious dude. He's a great guy. The players love playing for him. Just your overall sense of his time here and how the fans respond to Clint Hurdle when he comes in with the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Well, I always have a special place here because of the 07 season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that season will never – there's only one first. You know, the first World Series
right.
appearance, he guided it, and he was a big part of it. You know, 08 was disappointing, and 09 got off to a rocky start, and he ended up fired over given the expectations. Clint and I got along famously when he was a hitting instructor. I mean, I would love to talk to him. He'd come out of his dungeon of working mm-hmm. with a guy, and we would talk hitting or whatever, and he was fantastic. Clint and I, as a manager, didn't particularly get along because they were terrible, and he didn't like the fact that I was writing there terrible all the time. He would say stuff like he'd create expectation, and I'd hold him to it. He didn't like that. But I always respected the man, the person. He's got a big heart, and anything he dives into, it's full force in his life. He'll tell you that. Whether it was whether it was creating money and charitable donations for Prater Willie,
uh-huh.
whether it's another charity. I mean, Clint dives in fully. His work he did off the field at Children's Hospital here, it was amazing. Players, you know, again, he's learned as a manager how to. Be more like the Bill McCartney, come in at the end and kind of inspire and move back and let his coaches coach. The problem he ran into Colorado is he had so much power, Mark. He was doing everything from the BP music to how the field should look.
Right.
It was just too much
to
power.
Picking out the coffee in the clubhouse to the point where it pulls on you a little bit too much.
Right.
That's an issue. I think it's, you know, I think it's a lot of what we've talked about with Vance Joseph coming in here, and all of a sudden there's so much on you. You get overwhelmed. You get stressed.
Well, he didn't get overwhelmed. He loved the power, and he needed a buffer sometimes.
Right.
And in Pittsburgh, he trusted his coaches more.
Right.
His pitching coach is fantastic.
Yes.
He's trusted his coaches more, and I'm happy for his second chapter. It took him way too long to get a managerial job to begin with, and to see how he had success in Colorado. But frankly, to me, he's an even better manager in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, he's been great. It's a lot of fun to see him in town, and I'm going out to the Rockies tonight, so I can't wait to go out, eat some burgers and hot dogs and green chili, you know, smothered and stinking good green chili. It's going to be great. Going to be a great time out there. Can the most constant part of this defense thrive with the changes that have been made? We'll talk about that next.
Mark Schlereth here. When you're looking to replace your windows, you want the best. That's why I endorse Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. They sell Infinity from Marvin fiberglass windows. You can't buy Infinity windows from big box stores, so you know they never compromise on quality. Infinity fiberglass windows offer unparalleled value, energy efficiency, and durability. So call my friends at Gravina's Window Center of Littleton, 303-794-0490, or find them online at windowsforyourhome.com, and make sure you tell them Stink sent you.
Schlereth and Evans, good morning. Mark Schlereth alongside of Troy Rank. And Troy, you know, a lot of questions, and this whole camp has been this, you know, kind of make your, you know, the play on the words. And we were talking about Case Keenum and make your case and all this kind of stuff and promo stuff. And it's one of these camps where that you look up one side of the roster down the other. I mean, it's make your case for multiple places. I think the one thing that you and I have talked about ad nauseum with this team over the last couple of years is the strength of this defense has been the secondary, how they've kind of been built upside down since 2013, how they went out and got T.J. Ward and Aqib Talib and Chris Harris Jr. was here, and how they've really built the no-fly zone. And it's been the most constant part of what the Broncos have been over the last 6-7 years is that defensive secondary. And that defensive secondary, we haven't talked a lot about it. We've talked about how this offense looks and the way this offense is orchestrated and how good Case Keenum is and how these young receivers are playing right now. But that's one of the big question marks to me is here's a group, a unit that has been completely dominant over the last couple of years. And now all of a sudden, as you always mentioned, the soundtrack of that team or the soundtrack of that defense in Aqib Talib is gone. He's in with the Rams. They cut T.J. Ward last year. What have you seen so far in camp that either gives you pause or gives you great hope that this team can be the same?
Well, Bradley Roby's embraced the idea of being a starter, and he understands the challenge that it's different. Even though he started games in his career and played well, he is, as he told me, he's ready to ball out. Like, he's ready. He knows that what's at stake. He could be, he is a candidate for contract extension before the season. I don't know that he would take it, because if he goes out and plays great as a starting corner, the money's different for him. But he worked with Chris Harris in the offseason. He's more focused about this season, this job. So I think he's going to handle starting well. Now, he's not Aqib Talib. He's a different type of corner. I think he's going to play well. Darian Stewart's poised to bounce back. Justin Simmons, to me, has got a chance to be a star in this league because of his versatility, and he'll be even better in his second year as a starter. Where they're thin, though, is at nickel. Isaac Yiadom right now is starting at nickel, the kid from Boston College, a true rookie. He's moved ahead of Brendan Langley. The depth chart will come out today. I would be surprised if it doesn't list Yiadom in front of Langley. Maybe it lists him as co-guys, but they need to see Tremaine Brock. If Tremaine Brock doesn't get out here soon, I put in a call to Kayvon Webster, and just to add depth and experience, because you're talking about putting a guy on the field in Yiadom who's never played a pro snap. I mean, that to me is a bit of a concern, and I like Yiadom, but let's be realistic here. How much could you expect from him? And Webster's getting interest from five teams I know of, and in talking to sources on that. So Kayvon may not be able to wait for them, because they need to see Tremaine Brock. So the longer it takes for Brock to get on the field, I don't know if Kayvon Webster's that will match with his clock, because he's got other teams that are interested. But I'm concerned about their depth. Do I think they can be solid? Yes, Mark, I do. But they're lacking depth, because Roby as a nickel guy was overqualified. Now you've got nickel guys who haven't been on the field, and Yiadom and Langley showed last year he wasn't ready, and he still is showing his inexperience in this camp.
Well, you know, you talk about Bradley Roby, and I've always said, you know, when they said, hey, we got to figure out if this guy can play full-time, I'm like, he's played 60% of the snaps, he's good, but you're right, it's a different position, and it's a different kind of pressure. I mean, Chris Harris Jr. is probably going to take that number one role. He may travel with a guy. But Bradley Roby's going to step up as a full-time outside kind of corner starter, not your third, not your nickel guy. That, and here's what Chris Harris Jr. had to say about Bradley Roby's development in that role.
I think he's done well the first few weeks. There's still a lot of stuff we got to get on the same page with, just chemistry-wise, that me and Lee did so easy. It was just so easy that you never realize you got to work with that with somebody else. So right now we're getting that there, and I think we've been pretty on point with it so far.
Chemistry is an interesting perspective, because you don't think about it. You know, you think about the defensive secondary and it's kind of like cat coverage. You know, you got that cat, I got this cat, we're going to be good. But there is that kind of unspoken language where when you play beside one another, sometimes you just pick it up right away. Sometimes it's just, you know, I can speak to playing offensive line, you'll break a huddle. And as you're walking up the line of scrimmage, you'll see something, and you'll just look at your dude and go, hey, man, you see what I'm seeing? You know, you look over at Tommy Nail, and you look over at Gary Zimmerman or Tony Jones, and basically say, hey, you see that? You see that, you know, where that safety's lined up or where that weak side linebacker's lined up? You see what they're doing here? And you don't even have to say anything. It's just a look. Like, you just tap a guy on the arm as you're walking up the line of scrimmage. You go, and you're like, yeah, we're on the same page. And I think the same thing, like, when you talk about chemistry in that defensive secondary, you're both lined up. You got Chris Harris in the slot. You got Bradley Roby outside of him. And all of a sudden you see their splits and you're like, uh-oh, here comes that pick. Remember that pick we talked about? Let's banjo this thing. You take the inside, I'll take the outside, whatever. You know, the route combination, let's switch it up. We're in man, but let's switch it up. You have these moments, these kind of chemistry moments, especially down in the red zone, where you need to be on the same page. And sometimes it develops really quickly. Sometimes you just don't necessarily see the game the same way. You don't see the same things. And that's where, like, studying together and doing all that stuff together is really important. And that's why it's important to play beside each other a lot, you know, to have those reps, to do that. And it's one of the things, one of the unintended consequences of this new collective bargaining agreement is you just don't have as much time to kind of develop that chemistry with guys.
Well, and it's about trust. Especially in the secondary, because when you miss an assignment in the secondary, you're kind of naked to the world, and it's a big play.
Right.
And big plays haunted this team last year, frankly. Guys were taking chances. They were freelancing. Guys were getting out of coverage. With T.J. Ward gone, the communication on the backside wasn't what it was the previous year. I mean, they'll tell you that. That's not opinion. They'll tell you that. So can Roby and Chris Harris get on that kind of plane that you're talking about? We kind of look over and kind of nod the head of, I've got this, he does this. And that's what he had with Aqib Talib. There's no question Harris had that with Leib. No question. So can you microwave that in a training camp? Not necessarily, but you would hope after the first couple weeks it settles down to where you have an idea of where that guy's going to be on the field. And what's different this year, and Chris talked about it, he's moving around more.
Right.
He was more of an inside guy with Leib outside. And they're letting Chris, as you mentioned, trail the top receiver. He's not going to just be a slot guy, which I love because I think it's going to allow him to make more plays, but it does put more pressure and onus on a guy like Roby.
Who calls the defensive secondary? I mean, I think that was a big issue, and you mentioned it. T.J. Ward was gone. The communication lagged. Who's the guy that's taken over that? And, you know, I mean, they certainly had communication issues last year in that back end. So who takes that over, and do you expect that to kind of solve itself this year?
Justin Simmons is going to continue to grow in that role. I mean, last year was impossible. He's trying to establish himself as a starter while calling signals and still trying to recognize what he's seen on the field. In his second year, I expect him to take on more of a leadership role. Darian Stewart should play better, and I think the two of them together will work better. But ideally, it's going to become Justin Simmons. He's built for it. He embraces it. A year under his belt, I think you will see him, Mark, be a more assertive player on that backside.
Well, they're going to absolutely need to have that because you just saw how that didn't work or didn't function last year. Now, there were some other circumstances as well. As they started losing, they were behind, and, you know, guys started gambling and trying to make plays. So that's part of it as well. But you hope that you hope that gets rectified. You hope Justin Simmons sees it. The game slows down a little bit. He can communicate it better while still doing his job. Hey, the most intriguing team this offseason kicks off tonight and has nothing to do with a football game. I'll explain next in the Morning Brew.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your Morning Brew.
Things are going to get weird.
You're going to eat lightning and you're going to crack thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and coolers. Stat!
You know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What?
Orange mocha frappuccino!
Damn, Jimmy. This is some serious gourmet s***.
Let's get it on!
And that is toward the gap left center field. It'll be caught by Dickerson. Story will tag and come home. Good at bat for Iannetta. And the Rockies take a 2-0 lead.
Colorado Rockies 2-0 over the Pittsburgh Pirates. Just, you know, it's like Dumb and Dumber. Just when I think I'm ready to bury, you know, you reel me back in here. And that's the Colorado Rockies. What are they, two games out of first right now, something like that? They're right there. You know, better chance of winning the division right now than the wild card, because I think they're a bit out of maybe 4 or 5 games out of the water.
No,
wild card, it's
not that bad, but it's they're two out of the wild card, too. Because
two and two.
The Braves and Dodgers are essentially right there. I mean, there's a chance only, in a weird way, one team from the West could get in.
Right.
And we're thinking three. It probably won't be three. But that East is just hanging around between the Braves and Phillies. And the Brewers, as you mentioned, are better than we thought. So Yeah, they, again, the Rockies, in terms of getting in the playoffs, have to think of finishing ahead of either the Dodgers or Diamondbacks.
Right. Well, in Central, you're gonna get the Cubbies and the Brewers, right?
One of those two is gonna be in a wild card. Probably the Brewers.
Yeah. So one is gonna win the division. One's gonna be in a wild card. That's the way it looks as of right now. Now, I mean, injuries can happen and all those kind of things can go on, but the Rockies just keep on fighting, keep on hanging in there. They're a lot of fun to watch. Good for the Rockies. They keep our interest alive. Next,
Matt Slarek, what a fan!
You ever come in with your boy Five?
He does his own little workouts in the mornings.
Where's your own little workout in the morning?
Huh?
Where's your own little workout in the morning? You starting your career how you want to. You see what I'm saying? It's a competition in everything you do, baby. You know how to do it.
That is sound from tonight's first episode of Hard Knocks. And I mentioned, most intriguing team in football, or one of them, kicks off tonight. It has nothing to do with football. It has to do with Hard Knocks, a TV show. Are you a Hard Knocks fan? Do you watch camp? Do you see that? I mean, does this thing kind of pique your interest?
It kind of hit its zenith for me with the Jets and Rex Ryan.
Right.
That was by far the best one. His profanity was hilarious. He was just so candid and off the cuff. The last few ones have been a little boring, I'll be honest. Jeff Fisher, I mean, he was human Eeyore. He was so hard to watch on TV, and it's just boring. It was just boring. The Cincinnati Bengals was a great one, mm-hmm. with Ocho Cinco. The Ravens one, which had Ray Lewis, Shannon Sharp.
Right.
You just, for me,
Saragusa, that was
a good one, right?
Right.
You need a couple of the player personalities to drive it. Now, Baker Mayfield, in theory, would. I just think he might be tempering it a little bit, mm-hmm. because when you're not the starter, if you're kind of taking over a TV show, it's probably not the best look. But we'll see. Hugh Jackson is a personable guy.
Mm-hmm.
How much edge can you have when you've won one game in 2 years? You know, I just, it's good for them, because any attention for them is good attention, frankly. I mean, because the Browns are just so god-awful. But I do like Hard Knocks because it does pull the curtain back to things we don't get to see. The media access to the NFL is totally different than any other sport. So I do like the meeting room stuff and the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Right.
I find that fascinating. But for me to watch the whole season, I need more personality.
I think, you know, being a former player and having lived it, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff doesn't really intrigue me because I've seen. I've lived it. Like, I know what it's like behind the scenes. But this one, probably more than recent years, I haven't watched recent years. This one intrigues me more because the Browns have been such a train wreck, like an absolute train wreck. And it really does intrigue me to see exactly what Baker Mayfield looks like, you know, how Tyrod Taylor does. It just is. This one, for me, it piques my interest a little bit. Next in the Morning Brew.
There was a time or two where I thought I would not play football again, and I didn't think it was worth playing again. And I'm so glad to have worked through that. I've received a lot of help, you know, teammates, friends, family, fresh love, and also talking to some of my contemporaries and about things that they've gone through, and them sharing and opening up, you know, about themselves was also very helpful.
That's Andrew Luck of the Indianapolis Colts, who, let's be honest, and this just is a tangent, does he not sound like he should be on a Sesame Street? Like, there was a character that I mean, he just sounds like a Sesame Street. To me, like, hi-li-ho, you know, I mean, just sounds like a Sesame Street character.
He looks like a Civil War general, for sure.
Yeah, I love that whole Civil War thing. But a time or two where Andrew Luck thought about walking away from football. You've seen the Civil War Andrew Luck guy, right, that he always writes letters home to his mom on Twitter. It's awesome. That is awesome.
The fact that he considered quitting just tells you what he's been through with that shoulder. And we'll see. I mean, I'm surprised that it got to that point.
Right.
Because you'd be walking away from, what, $70 million? I mean, but it tells you, and you dealt with injury throughout your career. Did you find in your first, like, your significant injuries, was it harder to overcome the mental part, Mark, or the physical part? Because clearly with him, it's become a mental issue.
Right.
He was healed physically at some point last year, even kind of by his own admission. Getting over the mental hurdle of letting it go and throwing a football and trusting his arm again clearly has been a big hurdle for him.
I think mentally is the toughest part. You know, for me, I tore up my knee in college really bad. And what really saved my career is moving back over to the offensive side. Like, I just got so to the point where I'm trying to protect my body on the defensive side.
And you can't be the player you want.
Right, and so you're just trying not to hurt yourself again. You know, it's funny. You remember Darren Bragg, who played for the Rockies?
Yeah.
And he's coming off an ACL injury. And Darren Bragg stops me. I took Daniel, my son, down to down to spring training in Tucson. And so I'm in the locker room, and we're doing, you know, we're hanging out, and we're putting the mud on the baseballs, the mud from whatever.
Mississippi mud.
Yeah, the Mississippi mud. We're rubbing the baseballs, and you know, like we're getting the full experience, right? And Darren Bragg stops me and just is like, hey, man, how you doing? What's going on? And I ask him how his knee's doing. And this is part of the mental aspect of it. And he goes, oh, it's, you know, it's okay. It's just not quite there. It's not quite there. And I said, Darren, you mind if I give you a piece of advice? And he goes, yeah, sure. I go, it'll never be quite there. I go, if you're waiting around to be 100%, I go, you're going to wait yourself out of the league. Like, it's good enough to play on. You got to overcome and say, this is my new 100%. It's 80% of what it used to be, but it's my new 100%, and I can play on this. And you've got to let that go. So anyhow, we have a nice conversation. I bump into him like 4 years later. At ESPN, he's coming through that deal, and he goes, he just pulled me aside. He goes, you saved my career. He goes, you saved my career. That mental shift saved my baseball career. Went on to play for another 5-6 years, whatever it was. Well, anyhow, I think the mental part is the toughest part to overcome. Next on the Morning Brew.
Diagnosing the defense is Rivers. Changing the play. Puts his hands to the helmet. 1 second. Snap. Looking right. Still looking right. Going to the back of the end zone. Keenan Allen. Catch. Touchdown.
Knock on wood.
That is, knock on wood. That's obviously, from Chargers Radio right there. Philip Rivers talks about retirement. You know, Philip Rivers, I think, you look at the way baseball is, or football is constructed right now at the quarterback position. These guys are going to play. Like, Tom Brady just turned 41. Drew Brees is 39 years old. I think Philip Rivers and Ben Roethlisberger are both like 36 years old, 37 years old, something like that. I mean, these guys, the end is not near. Like, for any of these guys, they're going to play deep into their, it looks like Brady's going to play deep into his 40s.
Well, I mean, if Brady wins it this year, it might be his last year. I would still be surprised if he plays it, if he enters a season at age 42. But, hey, again, like you said, they're not getting hit. It's a different game than it used to be. Rivers would be a shame when he retires because he's been the ultimate heel to the Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
He's the WWE heel, and he loves it. He cultivates. I've never seen a quarterback love being the bad guy as much as he does, especially against Denver.
Right.
I mean, more than any other team. You know, guys hate him because he won't curse. He's like a little chihuahua. He just bark, 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 gap, 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 gap. But he never curses.
Uh-huh.
So you don't know how to react to it because he's got you so mad, but he's not mad in a way that's offensive and it's confusing. And remember when they put it up on the scoreboard and Manning freaked out when they beat the Chargers a couple years ago and they embarrassed Rivers? It was playing like, and Manning said, oh, it was inappropriate. Our scoreboard operator needs to have some more class. Rivers loved it.
Right.
He loved it. They put the thing on him, and the crowd booed him. It was straight out of WWE.
Yeah.
So I hope Rivers plays longer just because he's a fascinating watch.
He is, and it's funny that you mentioned that about Manning because Peyton Manning is like
– my best friend, Peyton Manning.
There's a lot of things. Like, Peyton Manning gets these huge offers to come do television, and he has so much respect for the game. I think it would be really hard for him to criticize anybody. You know, I mean, there's just
it wouldn't be his strength.
Yeah, it would just be hard for him to be able to be in that realm. You know, we're speaking about quarterbacks and obviously Peyton Manning and Philip Rivers. I want to talk about this quarterback matchup we have Saturday against the Minnesota Vikings because it's really intriguing. And how much are you going to be watching quarterback to quarterback comparison from the Vikings to the Broncos? We'll discuss next. Hey, welcome back to Schlur. Then Evans, Mark Schlur, sitting in for Mike Evans, who's out right now alongside Troy Rank. And I got to tell you, during the break, some of the things go on during the break. Troy pulls out of his bag just like this random Ziploc that had bread and I think it was turkey.
Pastrami turkey.
And cheese. And then you had like a little side thing of mayo. And it wasn't even like you ripped the bread in half and you just loaded it up and you had all these little cold cuts. You're like your own little Subway over here.
Well, I've learned from experience that I need to leave a certain amount of time to get here to be on time for you, Mark.
Uh-huh.
And when I looked at the clock this morning, like, I'm not going to have time to make this sandwich. I literally threw the ingredients into a bag and then got out the door. So, and I've made a point this year at camp because if I don't, it's the weirdest thing because there's so much around us, but we really don't have time to leave because I'm on radio and then practice starts at 9:30 till noon and we do pressers from like, let's say till 1:30, then I film the TV stuff, and then there's a walkthrough at like 3:30. So crazy as it sounds, there's not a lot of time to leave and go get lunch and come back. So it's much healthier for me if I bring my own food.
And they don't have a little lunch area for you as to roll in there and eat here for the Broncos?
No, that all ended when you guys came here. I think there was a couple years here the media still ate at the UC Health. But
because in my day in Greeley, we'd all sit in the cafeteria together and eat.
Yeah, and again, you don't want to become best friends with the players, but it was nice to be able to interview a guy and say, let's walk from the practice field.
Why don't you want to become best friends with the players?
Because you're covering him. You're covering him. Guys I stop covering or leave the team, that's different. But when you're covering a guy on the team as a reporter,
you want to make sure you leave some space so you can be critical of him like you were with Clint Hurdle, and that's why you guys don't get along now.
No, we get along fine now because he's not the manager anymore.
Okay.
When he was the manager and I was the beat writer, we didn't get along famously. But every other relationship, when he wasn't the manager, we've gotten along fine, as we do now.
All right.
But, yes, I made a sandwich. Yes.
Yes, he did make a sandwich.
And you get none
of it. Let's go to eat a damn snack.
Yeah, you know what?
There's Hard Knocks right there.
Unlike you, I do leave. And if I feel like leaving in the middle of practice, I'll do that too. So if I need something to eat, that's the way that's going to go. Although my wife and my granddaughters are coming to practice today, so that's going to be cool. And my daughters are coming to practice today, so they're in town. So that's going to be fun to hang out with them. And so anyhow, that'll be great. This preseason game, usually preseason game number one, It's not the most intriguing game. You know, we usually wait till game three before we like, hey, we're really going to get to see what this matchup's all about, what this football team is all about. But this is an incredible kind of matchup because of the quarterback situation. And for those who haven't been paying attention, when you start looking at this, remember, the Broncos had this dalliance, if you will, with Kirk Cousins. Then all of a sudden it fell apart and it was Case Keenum's our guy all along. The Minnesota Vikings had Case Keenum help them get to an NFC championship game, and the Vikings went 13-3 and didn't even offer the guy a contract. They basically said, don't let the door hit you on the way out, right? And so you've got this matchup between Kirk Cousins, the guy that they think gets them over the top, pushes them through the glass ceiling, versus the guy they shun that took them to an NFC championship in Case Keenum playing on Saturday night. But I think the backups are even more intriguing because Trevor Siemian, who's been the starter here for the last 2 years, is now the backup in Minnesota to Kirk Cousins. And you've got Paxton Lynch, who, let's face it, has not really performed.
He sucks.
Outside of one day where people thought he performed pretty well, he really hasn't done a whole lot to make you go, yeah, he's got this second team locked up. I mean, I feel like if there was a real competition between him and Chad Kelly, if Chad Kelly would get the same number of reps with the twos, that Chad Kelly would probably usurp at this point Paxton Lynch. And then you've got Kyle Sloter, who was a guy that really ripped it up in camp last year for them, that a lot of us in the media were intrigued with, that they try to push through the practice squad. The Minnesota Vikings put him on their active roster, you know, versus this Chad Kelly. So there's a lot of intriguing kind of quarterback matchups between these two teams, kind of directly, indirectly, however you want to kind of frame it.
Well, know this about Case Keenum. He has an edge. He lives in this kind of power of positivity, but let's not forget, I mean, it was a real diss that Minnesota walked away from him after last year. 13-3, and they couldn't get rid of him fast enough.
Right.
And they waited every week. Even if you listen, because I listened to their play-by-play last year, because Paul Allen's one of the fabulous play-by-play guys in the NFL for Minnesota. They were just kind of always waiting for one mistake to bench him.
Right.
even as he's cruising through the season, you know, it's like he was looking over his shoulder. So Keenum, you know, I'm sure even if it's one drive, he wouldn't mind sticking it to him with a touchdown. But you're right. The optics really, for me, become Lynch versus Simeon. If Lynch goes out there on Saturday, I believe it's Saturday, right? Help me out here. It is Saturday.
Yes, Saturday.
Right? It's the 11th. I know that. He goes out there on Saturday. If Lynch doesn't play well, I think it drives home the notion the Broncos are going to have to go get a veteran as a backup, whether that's Matt Moore, a guy like that, whether that you have to wait for the league to give up on a quarterback like a Teddy Bridgewater, although, you know, I keep hearing from sources that the Jets might carry three, but a Bridgewater-type guy. I mean, I just believe that at some point they're going to have to go get a quarterback to protect themselves. And that's why watching this game, if Lynch comes out and does not play well, you do have to consider – the possibility of, okay, we may have to move him. What if you moved him for a seventh-round pick at this point?
That would be great.
And that keeps Kelly on the roster. Because remember this, if they bring in a veteran and they can't move Lynch, Kelly's gone. Unless for some reason he, out of luck, they get him to the practice squad. I don't think he'll get through to the practice squad, Mark. If Kelly has a good camp, I don't think
he'll
get through the practice
squad. And that's
squad.
What they tried to do with Slaughter last year.
Right.
And that's where it really becomes a conundrum, because I think they're going to have to sign another veteran quarterback, right? It's the middle of August, or almost the middle of August, but as I like to call them, middle of June guys, I think they need one. Because I just don't think you look at this roster as currently constructed. Do you really feel comfortable like saying, hey, Paxton Lynch is our guy, or Chad Kelly's our guy, if we have a couple of weeks where we have to kind of weather the storm of an injury, a thumb injury, you know, a thumb gets hit on a helmet as you're releasing the ball, and the next thing you know, hey, it's going to be a couple of weeks before you can play again? Like, do you really feel comfortable
doing
that?
There's no way they could say that with a straight face they're comfortable with Lynch taking over for 3 weeks right now.
Right.
No way.
So, but then he'd come in with the conundrum of, well, what do we do if we get this middle of the June guy? Do we continue to hold out hope that Lynch becomes the guy and put him at third? Do we carry, you know, do we try to sneak Chad Kelly through waivers, or do we realize we're not going to sneak him through waivers? He gives us a better opportunity in the future. Let's move Paxton Lynch. A lot of questions that have to be answered. And there has been one question to me that really has been answered in this first week of camp, albeit we still have to find out about game management. But that one question, VJ, the difference between him last year and this year, and I think he's answered those questions, and we'll talk about it in Clear the Air next.